Thank you for tuning in to the FactCheckVaccine.com audio stream podcast. If you find the following information helpful, please share it with others. And now we begin the audio stream.
This is being called a pandemic among the unvaccinated.
This is becoming a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
A pandemic of the unvaccinated.
This is an epidemic that's occurring in the unvaccinated.
We're seeing a pandemic among the unvaccinated.
This is becoming a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
The Centers for Disease Control says unvaccinated Americans are driving these numbers, accounting for nearly all deaths and almost all of the hospitalizations.
Virtually every person who is in the hospital right now, sick with COVID-19, is unvaccinated.
We are seeing outbreaks of cases in parts of the country that have low vaccination coverage because unvaccinated people are at risk.
So it's going to find those pockets in each community where people aren't vaccinated, and it's going to do a lot of damage.
To get to the bottom of this pandemic, this supposed surge, and discussions about the Delta variant and what effects that may or may not be having, I want to talk to somebody that has a lot more understanding of this. I'm talking about Dr. Peter McCullough. He's an internist, a cardiologist, and he's published over 30 peer-reviewed studies on SARS-CoV-2. So it is my honor to be joined right now by Dr. McCullough. Dr. McCullough, first of all, thank you for taking the time to join us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Obviously, there's been a real sort of languaging shift in the media. And once again, as we're getting used to, it's as though a script is being sent to every network by somebody. I'm assuming FDA, CDC, NIH are writing a script. It's all the unvaccinated. There's a surge happening because of the unvaccinated. And my question really is, and it's something that we've talked a lot on the high wire about, the potential dangers and what's unknown about the coronavirus vaccines, Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson here in America. But what we really have never gotten deep into is efficacy. You know, we hear that it's safe and effective. We've talked to you about the safety before when you were on before. But is this vaccine, does this vaccine do what we think vaccines? When we hear the word vaccine, we hear a product that is given prophylactically that keeps me from being infected and keeps me from then transmitting it to someone else. Does this vaccine do that?
No, it looks like it doesn't. Now, we have really breaking reports from Israel where about 80% of the adult population over age 20 has received the Pfizer vaccine. And in fact, about 80% of those COVID-19 cases, in fact, are among the vaccinated individuals. Among those hospitalized in Israel, it's 60% have been fully vaccinated. The same thing is true in the United Kingdom, where they have about 75% vaccinated, in this case, with an array of vaccines, Pfizer, Moderna, and AstraZeneca. About 40% of those hospitalized in the UK, in fact, have been fully vaccinated. What's going on is the Delta variant, and this is one in a sequence of variants that really has arisen as a result of mass vaccination. Now the Delta variant has undergone antigenic escape, immune escape, if you will, and it's avoiding the antibodies of the vaccine and causing COVID-19 illness in individuals. Fortunately, it's milder and it's easier, more easily treated, but the great fear is that the vaccinated will assume they're protected when in fact they're not.
So you are one of these scientists, and there is a debate about this over this idea that Dr. Geert Van den Bosch really brought to the world, which is this pressure of a vaccine in the middle of a pandemic, giving a vaccine where the antibodies are not robust enough, they haven't mounted, you don't have enough of the population, that vaccine has the potential to pressure the virus to escape, to, you know, immune escape, to develop qualities that get around the immune system, certainly get around whatever the antibodies that are designed by the vaccination. Do you believe that is what we're seeing when they talk about the Delta variant? Because we hear mainstream news here in America saying it's the unvaccinated that are causing variants like the Delta.
Well, there was a paper published last fall by an author, Van Dorp, that analyzed this and basically let us know there's probably at least 125 different variants out there. We know that there's over 1,000 potential mutations, but the variants are largely restricted to changes, amino acid changes, in the spike protein. And that's where kind of where all the antigenic action is with respect to the vaccines. And then a critical analysis by Neeson and colleagues from the Mayo Clinic in Boston have shown when a population gets to be more than 25% vaccinated, that's enough of an evolutionary pressure to allow one of these mutant forms to become the dominant strain. So vaccination is reducing the viral diversity and making it a more compressed environment with fewer number of mutant strains, and allows one to become more dominant. In the case of India, it was the use of the Sinovac vaccine that really prompted the emergence of the Delta variant. And now we're seeing Sinovac again be the stimulus for the emergence of the Lambda variant out of Peru. So mass vaccination, as opposed to targeted vaccination, is in a sense creating the problem of this immune escape of the virus.
Now, when a layperson, even myself, when I hear, you know, vaccine pressure, I get this idea that the vaccine hits a virus and that little virus is sitting there like working out, saying, I'm going to beat you, and figures out a way around. But is it that, or is it really more the fact that so many people that take a vaccine or have immunity to one, you know, strain or one, you know, variant, that the other variant's always there? It just becomes more prominent because it's not being stopped by anything. It's sort of, you know, is that a better description of what's taking place?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, I'm an internist and cardiologist, and I've also trained in epidemiology. And I think as a professor of medicine, I've basically done an entire year of dedicated COVID research and work at this point in time, been studying this very carefully. And that's my understanding, as you articulated, that there is this array of strains out there. And then as each one, you know, patients can actually be infected with more than one strain at a time. But in a population, our CDC keeps track of this. The original wild type strain that the vaccines are coded to, by the way, that's extinct now. Now we're down to six strains. The emerging strain that's dominant in the United States is the Delta variant, which appears to be able to escape all the known vaccines right now. And then second now is the UK variant, which previously was responsive to our vaccines.
Now, is your opinion, because the what I've been reading, many studies keep looking at the previously infected, those unvaccinated people that caught the wild virus. We keep seeing amazing numbers for them, studies showing that they're maintaining their immunity. I think a study out of Israel said that there was only 1% or less than 1% that were being reinfected, when nearly 50% of the vaccinated were the ones being in hospitals. Do you believe that the Delta variant is going to be an issue for people that were previously naturally infected by the coronavirus?
No, the natural immunity appears to be robust, complete, and durable. And when there's a really solid case of someone documented with infection, they have the characteristic signs and symptoms, and they have a positive PCR and antigen test, that person has lifetime, what we believe is lifetime durable immunity. There's never been a second documented case in an individual where the first episode was substantiated. However, the confusion occurs when someone has not had a solid first case, but maybe has had an antibody test turn positive. And there is a remote possibility of an infection. So they may have ambient positive antibodies to start with. An analysis by Mertu and colleagues, 650,000 individuals across 11 studies, looked at this idea of having a prior infection not well defined. And the answer was a 0.2% chance of infection. Unlike the vaccine, where we knew even in the spring in the United States, our CDC had a fully documented 10,000 cases of vaccine failures by the end of May. So we knew the vaccines were even failing before the Delta variant moved in. And in fact, the CDC gave up on this, and they started doing what's called asymmetric reporting, meaning that they were not going to count vaccine failures in the COVID-19 rates. And that's how the talking points were generated. Americans should know that the CDC, by the end of May, had announced asymmetric reporting of COVID-19. This is important to understand, that they were only going to report COVID-19 community cases in those that were unvaccinated, that they were no longer going to track COVID-19 in those who had received vaccination. And if they became aware, if the first test was obtained in the hospital and they were vaccinated, they would try to link it up with vaccine databases. But otherwise, the CDC is intentionally and willfully blind through breakthrough cases for COVID-19 vaccination. So that's what's created the false and fraudulent talking point that 99% of American cases are unvaccinated. It's not true. It's probably roughly 50-50. And that's what we're seeing in practice. We have about half the cases are indeed vaccine failures.
And that's what I'm hearing from my friends in ER, and obviously what we're seeing in other nations around the world, especially Israel, where that's probably the best test group to be looking at as a nation. So when I see doctors and scientists reporting on the news that the immunity given by the vaccine is better than the natural immunity, can I call that a lie? Is that officially a lie when we hear that?
It's a false statement, and it may be intended to somehow promote the vaccine. But the natural immunity is robust, complete, and durable. As you know, it has a full biologic support where we can't get the infection again. And the vaccine is frankly failing. So the vaccine must be far inferior to natural immunity.
So now let me ask you this. There's a lot of people that are skeptical that write into our show. And they're saying, do we really have antibody tests that are capable of delineating the Delta variant? Is this Delta variant mythological in that they're just claiming every infection now is Delta variant when we hear that it's the dominant strain? What kind of science is behind that? Can we trust that science that this is all Delta variant? As you said, the original wild strain is now eradicated or is gone, it's disappeared. How are they coming to the conclusion that's the Delta variant and not the Lambda? Or, you know, are these PCR tests, which is mostly what's being used, are they accurate enough to determine what variant people are infected with?
The variants are determined by genomic sequencing tests. So sequencing tests are very different than PCR or antigen tests. So they have to rely on sequences in the spike protein and the nucleocapsid. The United Kingdom's doing a great job. They publish a variants of interest report. The last one was the 17th version on June 25th, where they had fully sequenced about 250,000 infections. And there we knew 250,000 infections, and they had 900,000 infections that were in fact the Delta variant. They knew that 42% were fully vaccinated. So they've done a wonderful job in sequencing. The CDC does a select sample of sequencing as well. And that's how we know the report. The last one we had, the CDC, was the end of June. We're down to about six variants. The Alpha variant was still slightly dominant, I think at about 30%, and Delta was right behind it. We now have reports that Delta has emerged as the dominant variant in the United States.
But as you've said, it appears that it may be more infectious, but not more deadly or dangerous. Is that a correct statement?
The infectivity is determined from in vitro tests using a human cell culture to see if the virus can more effectively invade a human cell. It doesn't apply to populations now where there are so many individuals who have natural immunity. So I don't think from an epidemiologic perspective, this is more infectious at all. It's not going very fast. In Israel, at the peak of their cases, they had 10,000 cases a day. They have 1,000 cases per day. Now it's mainly Delta. But I've told America, I've been on a national TV several times, we're going to get a small rise in Delta, but it's not going to be anything like what we saw in December. So it doesn't have the herd immunity is going to buffer that, quote, infectivity. It does have a lower mortality rate than we're seeing out of the UK. The UK reported a mortality rate of the Alpha strain at 1.8 and that Delta at a case fatality rate of 0.2% of the cases that came to attention. But mortality is so highly amenable to early treatment, it's really hard to report on that. In Delta cases who get early treatment with multi-drug approach, the mortality should be negligible.
Do you share the concern that was put out, you know, by Dr. Geert Vandenbosch and others that if we keep pressuring this virus, we're going to create an unnatural evolution where the virus tends to want to evolve to become less deadly. It'll kill its host. It'll wipe itself out. But under a largely vaccinated community, a virus can live. It can start to, you know, have immune escape. And we could end up creating a virus that is more deadly, that is maybe vaccine resistant and more deadly. Do you share any of Dr. Vandenbosch's concerns, or do you think what we're watching is natural and this is all going to sort of just work itself out?
Now, the analyses that I mentioned from Neeson and colleagues does suggest the vaccination is influencing the natural ecological biology of the virus. So we're getting fewer strains, strains that are becoming more dominant as they try to escape the immunity of the vaccine. But so far, they're progressively less virulent. And we haven't seen this disaster scenario that was cast by some immunologists to suggest we may breed just a monster virus that's going to wipe us out. But, you know, we are getting signals since the current sets of vaccines don't work anymore. And we're starting, in a sense, to play with Mother Nature and the overall compression of the diversity of viruses. We're getting some signals here that we probably should shut down the vaccine program and go ahead and close out the pandemic with early treatment.
And obviously, you've done a lot of discussions about treatment. When I was talking to an ER doctor of my friend just earlier today, we were talking about that you know, we're seeing this surge. We're you know, or he's saying it feels like there's a surge, and it's in both, you know, vaccinated, unvaccinated. Is there a surge? I mean, there's a lot of discussion right now. I've heard numbers as high as 70% higher hospitalization rates in some states across America than we were at last week, as though we could end up in a situation. California just said, everybody put your masks back on. Vaccinated or unvaccinated, everybody's putting their masks back on. There's a concern, I think, amongst those people that finally are feeling free, are out breathing, you know, the air. A summer was robbed from us last year. We're enjoying this one. There's a concern we're going to go back into these measures of lockdowns and masks because the news really seems big on this surge that's happening. Is there a surge, and how concerned should we be about it?
Well, we have a very low baseline, so any increase from a low baseline will look like a percentage, like a big number in percentage. We are having a rise. This was anticipated. It's happening in the UK. It's happening in many places around the world. It's happening in Japan right now. But it's not at the level of a surge where we need to, you know, become battle ready. In my view, there's no public health impetus to start wearing masks or going into lockdown. We do need to make the monoclonal antibodies available. We need to have a lot of messaging on that. We need to have a lot of messaging on early treatment, protect the high-risk seniors, especially because the vaccines are failing. And all these people have gotten the vaccine. Instead of being protected, now they're actually susceptible to the Delta variant.
And when I was talking to my friend, you know, he said, you know, I said, how bad is the surge? He says, it's just like a regular flu. It's not anything more. I said, yeah, but we're in the middle of the summer in July. Is it like flu in July? And he said, no, that's a good point. That is weird that we are seeing a surge of a respiratory virus in the middle of the summer. How would you explain that? I mean, that is something I don't remember in my lifetime, any form of a flu or coronavirus having any sort of action, especially a surge in the middle of the summer. Have we unnaturally created that, or what would be the explanation?
I think the most ready explanation, and Gert van de Bosch did predict this, and that's carriage. Now, it's possible that mass vaccination has now allowed those who have been vaccinated to carry the virus and then transmit it to others and hit a susceptible person who can express symptoms. If that's the case, we may actually have a lot more Delta around, and the vaccinated are simply carrying it to one another. You heard about a bunch of lawmakers who got on an airplane, and they were ostensibly well. And when they got off the plane, a couple people developed COVID-19 afterwards. There was a naval shipping vessel that had 3,700 sailors on, all vaccinated, ostensibly all fine. And then 100 cases develop over the next few weeks. It brings up the issue of carriage. And this is a little bit disturbing, because if that's the case now, we're just going to carry this virus into summer season and everything else, as opposed to going through some natural oscillation. So I'm a bit concerned about this, you know, these events that have been reported in the last few weeks.
We were sold on the vaccination was our only way forward. You've been an outspoken person on the idea that it was never just vaccinations, that there have been treatments, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, budesonide. These are all products that have been through some pretty extensive studies now, showing that they have varying degrees of effectiveness, certainly more effective than what we're seeing from the vaccination. What is our way forward? And are you, in your speaking out the way you have, are you seeing the hospital systems in America listening and starting to use more of these treatments? Or is there still this very strange resistance by hospital groups to actually treat the people with things that seem to be working around the world?
I think there's more and more American doctors certainly are joining the circles of early treatment, particularly primary care doctors, independent doctors. There are now national and regional telemedicine services treating doctors. The word is out. America knows that this is a treatable illness, and they're seeking treatments through a variety of sources. More and more doctors are coming online. The hospital doctors are much slower, and they're still stuck trying to give remdesivir and other things that really don't work in the hospital, and they're too late. So we need more to jump on board with early treatment. It's supported by Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. There's another leading group called the Frontline Critical Care Consortium. These are really leading groups now for early treatment. And the drugs have been flowing in the United States now for months. Basically, millions of Americans have avoided hospitalization and death with the use of early treatment. No single drug works alone, but they certainly work well in combinations.
When we look at these numbers that are touted in the news, over 600,000 killed by SARS-CoV-2, which makes it arguably one of the most deadly pathogens ever to sweep America. Do you trust those numbers? How do you, as a physician, someone that, you know, has, I believe, always been pro-vaccine, you're a part of, you know, working in the system, you believe in medicine. Do you believe those numbers? Have we really seen the death of over 600,000 people from this virus?
The CDC acknowledges itself on its web pages that 90% of individuals had significant contributing illnesses to the death. About 10% looks like it's COVID-19 alone. In pediatrics, I think we're almost down. Dr. Macri from Hopkins has an analysis that was presented this week suggesting maybe we're down to one child in the United States died of COVID-19 itself. All the other children had contributing diseases like leukemia or cystic fibrosis, et cetera. I've never seen a viral illness like this. I've treated far more than 100 patients. I've advised on many hundreds, if not thousands, of individuals. There's viral replication, cytokine storm, and thrombosis. It appears to be a really difficult illness to treat late. And it seems so easy to treat early. So my best advice is age over 50, multiple medical problems, treat early, and we can avoid death, whatever its cause attribution is.
The President of the United States, Jen Psaki, have made statements this week, pretty strong statements, that people that, you know, speak against the effectiveness, like we're doing, of this vaccine right now, speak against the safety, that to say anything that it's not safe and effective, that they're essentially, we're killing people. I think Biden may have backed it off at one point. He said, Facebook allowing this information to be shared are murderers. That is very, very strong language from the president of a free country, this administration. Not to get political about it, but this is the nation we live in. And we are seeing, at the same time this rhetoric is coming out, discussions of door-to-door sensors based on your vaccination status. It's clear when we look at the door knockers, they're going to be taking information. Have you been vaccinated? Have you not? Dr. Tony Fauci has said he supports mandates in businesses and universities pushing this vaccine, which you and I now clearly are discussing is not doing the job. So why would we push it? You want to wind it down. They seem to want to go further. How do you see this coming to a head between really two different medical or science perspectives and the most powerful position in the world in the President of the United States?
Well, here we are, Del. We're right at 50% of Americans don't want the vaccine. 50% of Americans have not been fully vaccinated. The vaccine centers have started to decline mid-April. They've been empty in May and June and now into July. There are inducements and bribes and lotteries and mandates. It's pretty clear Americans don't want the vaccine. The word is out. They understand it's not working. They see their relatives getting sick after vaccination. They're seeing record numbers of vaccine related fatalities and injuries. And so this is going to be just an unbelievably tense struggle between will of the people and those who really want to force the vaccine on the population, on the remainder of the population, when the vaccine is not effective and it's not safe.
What, just to wrap it up, because I get asked this all the time, what am I supposed to do as a citizen? So many people calling, my employer is forcing it. We just don't know what we do in this situation. We want to believe in our country, but we can tell that our leadership, as you've just pointed out, and it's clear to anyone looking at it, is wrong on a very, very important topic. Some of us feel, you know, disempowered at this time. What is your recommendation to people? Someone's going to come up to the door and knock, ask them their status. They're going to be moving into a space that doesn't look like the United States of America as we know it. Lists are being made. What do you want? What do you think is the message we need to put out to American citizens, especially on how we move forward and get through this very, as you said it, I think going to be a very complicated time?
I think Americans are going to really need to make their voice known through the phone and through messaging of their leaders. So many Americans I talk to, I get these desperate emails and messages too, Del, and they say, Dr. McCullough, can you help me with a mandate, what have you? And I said, well, have you messaged your company or have you messaged how you feel to your university? And the answer is, no, I haven't. I'm afraid. That personal fear, the fear of reprisal, and actually make their voices known. Right now, the people we're talking about, they haven't gotten enough resistance. They haven't gotten enough negative feedback. They actually think they're doing the right thing by mass vaccinating the population. And they need to hear the voices of Americans. About half of us basically say, listen, we need to stop.
I agree with you. It's time for people to speak their truth, to stand in their truth, be bold in their truth, and make it difficult, right? I'm not talking about doing anyone any harm, but stand. It's time to resist things that are not, you know, American, and rights that are truly ours, given to us by God. If we don't stand for it, you know, stand up for it, nobody will. Dr. McCullough, I know you're racing off. You're a very busy man, and we really appreciate your knowledge and your taking the time. And most especially, I want to thank you for really putting it on the line. So many doctors and scientists have been afraid to speak out. Many of them speak to me privately. The more of you that step forward and speak the way you have on in media, I think you're really making a difference and you're changing the world. It's an honor to know you. I hope you go down in history and it shines brightly upon you as we make our way through this.
Thank you, Del. Same to you.
All right. Take care.